Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We'll fight to the death. We are soldiers. We are soldiers.
Conversation and also part of the Patriot Journalist Network. And you can find the Patriot Journalist Network by going to Facebook if you are a Facebook user. And you can go to the search engine and just type in Patriot Journalist Network as one word, and it will take you to the app. And you will see other shows on there, such as Charlotte Bively's Pray USA. And you will also find Mark Price's show called Full Armor. And I like to say, if there are any new folks here listening either live or later on archives, and you like the shows and you have not already followed Bard's Logic Political Talk, go ahead and do so. It's real easy. Just go to the little follow button, which you can find underneath the icon, and just click on that, and you'll be on your way to following the show. And also, I'd like to give a shout-out to folks who are on the panel who have their shows, and that is Rex and Tex, or actually it's the Tex and Rex show, which you can find on Friday and Saturday evenings from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And then after Bard's Logic, you can find the Samuel Sanford Show, Constitutional Conservatives Unite, at 11 p.m. till around 1 to 2 a.m., also Eastern Time. Now, tonight, we're going to talk about the different parties that the Bard's Logic Political Talks panel has interviewed from the Americas, the Constitution, and Libertarian parties. Now, tonight we will discuss what we've learned and compare and contrast the policies, platforms, and issues of these parties with the Republican, and Democrat parties. And so we'll also discuss, as I said, what we learned and the strategy for grassroots third parties to have success in 2012. Now, I'd like to let in one of the members of the Bard's Logic panel, and that is Chris. And Chris, I'm going to open up your mic. And we have someone else on 704. I see you are in the queue. And if you'd like to speak on what's on your mind tonight, just push the 1 button on your phone and let me know if you'd like to chime in. So at this time, I'm going to open up Chris's mic. Chris, thank you very much for calling in. And we do have 704, which thank you for chiming in. I'm going to open it up to Chris, and then we will have 704 come in. Go ahead, Chris, and thank you for calling. Yes, Chris, are you there?
Okay, I had my mute on. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's quite all right. The guy's
well,
looking
behind.
I'm like, wait, is it more on mute? But no, it's there. Go ahead.
I was wandering around with the mute on. I didn't want to make noise while you were opening up.
Well, no problem.
Cool. So I'm pretty fired up about this. I'm glad that you did this because we have been on a on kind of a firestorm here, day after day after day, two shows back to back interviewing candidates, presidential candidates, state chair, vice chair. You know, we've been kind of on a runner there. Be honest with you, I just took a nap, so that'll tell you.
Yeah,
but it's been awesome.
And we also have some more. Also, I'm working on getting James Gray on, who's the vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party. And so far, we're trying to get things pinned down with Gary Johnson to come on, perhaps on October 1st and 4th. Nothing is completely confirmed. But those are the two days I discussed with the Johnson campaign about possibly having him on. And I'll let the folks know any developments as soon as I know.
Well, that's really exciting. And I also know on the Constitution Party that we're working on doing some pretty neat things. One of them is Floyd is working on getting a couple, three sheriffs that are on their, you know, part of their party, on discussing how important, you know, your roles of sheriffs are in, you know, in your state, and how that ties into, I guess, even some other conversations that we've had with Kelly Mordecai on state authority, state sovereignty, and all those discussions. And then possibly, I'm not sure exactly when yet, you know, it's all these things are in the run, everybody's busy, but also getting Virgil Good and Jim Clymer back on. So that, you know, it's just some neat stuff going on here.
Yeah, definitely. We're looking forward to it because one of the things, at least I would like to show the folks, is that there definitely is other opportunities and other options out there for other parties other than the Democrat and the Republican Party, and namely other options other than voting for Obama or Mitt Romney.
Oh, thank God.
So at this time, Chris, we've got somebody who's been on hold for a little bit. We'll let them in to chime in. And just a little bit of the ground rules here is that, and I think we're also still waiting for possibly Kelly and Rex to call in later on tonight. While we're waiting for that, we'll have 7:04. As I said, the rules are is we refrain from profanity here, so no F-bombs or GDs or anything of that nature. We also, you were to have respect for the host and any guests on, and, of course, the folks in the chat and who will later be listening here on the archives. So even if someone calls to disagree with what we are proposing here on Bard's Logic, or at least discussing, if not proposing, with Bard's Logic, we'll do it in a respectful way, even if it becomes a debate. So with that, I will let 704 in. If you could just give us your name and location. The location is more for my curiosity than anything else. And then tell us what's on your mind.
Rod Class.
Yes,
and I'm supposed to be coming in on the show here tonight with Robert.
This Rod Class?
Oh, well, there you go.
But I come
Rod.
Out of North Carolina.
Yes, Rod Class.
Yes.
No, we, okay, well, now we've had that scheduled for Sunday. I thought we were talking about Sunday for, this is funny.
No, that's cool.
No, but I tell you what, since you're on, would you have some time to discuss with us what you're, I mean, we're talking about other parties, and so definitely it's kind of an open discussion tonight, so we'd be more than happy to talk about what you've got for the show.
Well, yeah, because I was told to call in probably about a little after 9 o'clock here tonight. No reason, I'm a little bit early, but yeah, I was talking with Robert.
That's me.
I was explaining to him that I'm running for a write-in candidate for the presidency of the United States under the Republic form of government. And what we was discussing is that your Libertarian Party, your Constitutional Party, your Tea Party, your Republican, your Democrat, all these gentlemen that are running for these positions don't really understand that they're running under the democracy side of this thing. Even though they're saying that they're Constitutional or Tea Party, they still had to go through the Secretary of State, sign up, with the understanding that they were technically coming in under the democracy side of this thing. And what I'm doing is I'm running back under the Constitution itself, to where it sits here and says the people are supposed to be picking who they want for the candidate, not a specific party who decides who they're going to choose from. So, but I host AIB Radio, and my archives are in TalkShoe.com, and we're recording this now on TalkShoe. But I do AIB Radio. I'm a host on it, and I've had to take a sabbatical for a little bit on it. But I'm doing private calls, and this is going to be one of the private calls. But we are addressing the presidency side and why we have to get out of the democracy side of this thing. And as long as we're going to be able to pick from the Democrats, the Republican Party, the Tea Party people, as much as some of the libertarians, they're trying to, but they are corralled into the democracy side of this thing, whether they realize it or not. And if they try to run this thing under the legitimacy of their campaign, this is why Ron Paul and these guys are getting knocked out. So this is why I decided to run on an open platform of the Republican form of government, to where there is nothing going through the Secretary of State, to where it is the people out here through the internet, through the broadcast that we're doing on your show and other shows, and what I'm doing here on TalkShoe, to get this out across the internet instead of TV media. I got a little bit of a different platform because, see, what we're doing, if you ever did a background check and you look on the internet, look up Rodney Class, look on YouTube, get into my archives. We sit down because of the research team that I have behind me. We have exposed so much corruption on the fact of the state of emergency side that everything is running under that 1933 state of emergency. All the courts are running underneath this. I just made a discovery here today under CFR, Code of Fed Regulations, under Title 28, under a judicial administration. I got down into section 0.55, and it got into subpart K, criminal division of the Attorney General's office. As I started reading this, it started explaining that they are running all criminal prosecutions, which is what I've been saying, under the Trading with the Enemy Act. They're running it under Title 50, War and National Defense, under Section 403H, National Security. They're bringing this in under Alien Residence. And that backs up the Title 50 under Chapter 3, Alien Enemies, Section 23, the jurisdiction of the court of alien enemy residents. And that's how they're running us into these court systems. And see, nobody was aware of this, but I've been pounding on this for quite some time. But we also have been going back in exposing the bankruptcy and laying all this out for the people. And we have been exposing banks for the last several years along with other groups. But we've actually got it to the place where it's been coming out more and more that your signature is the collateral for your loan. And this is the home. And this is what McFadden said here and said in 1932, 1933. Your signature is the collateral, not the merchandise. So this is one of the reasons why I decided to go ahead and run on the Republican side of this thing. But see, where we have a problem, and I've talked to several different people out here, and they're under the misconception that if you are a Republican, that is the Republic form of government. And if you are a Democrat, that is the democracy side. That's furthest thing from the truth, because in 1933, Roosevelt, when he did what he did, he declared that the Republic was dead and the democracy was up and running. Because in 1929, the military had what was known as a citizen book. And it went in, it talked about the Constitution, it talked about the Republican Party, it talked about the democracy. And it went back and showed that the democracy runs under mob rule and it runs under territorium for dictatorship. Mm-hmm. So he destroyed the Republic because he had that book destroyed from the military. And that comes under TM, Military Training Manual, 2000-25. And that's still on the internet. And if you get in and read this thing, you're going to get a very rude awakening. And this is why he had that book destroyed. So we're not running under a republic form of government with the Republicans and a democracy with the Democrats. All parties involved, Tea Party, Constitutional Party, Libertarian Party, Republican Party, the Democrats, all of it flat out runs under democracy. And people are not aware of this. And I have got into this, and that's why I decided to push this thing for the Republic form of government. Questions?
Robert?
Oh, I'm multitasking here, Chris. I'll leave that to you. If you can tell us, do you have some more detail on? I just said it was a question. Is you know even more in depth detail on the comparison between a republic election versus a democratic election? The different systems on how they work.
Okay, under the republic form, you the people pick who you want for state legislators, federal legislators, and for a presidency. Under the democracy, the parties pick who you're going to choose and they pick their candidates. And see, this is where the big difference has really come down, is the people are not choosing. They're being told, you have a choice, either or, and you're not entitled to an opinion. And see, since 1933, we've really pretty much ran under that concept, because I can remember growing up and my parents sitting here saying, you know, we're picking bad to worse, bad to worse. Why are you picking bad to worse? Because under the democracy side, they're picking, they're telling. On the Republic side, you people choose who you want. And see, you'd never been given that opportunity, because we've never been given that opportunity. We've all been brainwashed that if you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, and they never got into the form of government. Because, see, the Constitution under Article 4, Section 4, guarantees the people a Republican form of government, but that didn't mean a Republican party. That was supposed to have been a government for the people, by the people, chosen by the people. And ladies and gentlemen, you haven't had that. And nobody has ever ran on this side. Nobody's ever conceived of it. So this is why I've done a lot of background, did a lot of research, started doing some listening to some of the old tapes that we've gotten into, especially with that Nassar of the 1980s, what has happened here, what the military's talked about. I went back in. Like I said, I've got a research team. And we've got into the historical, so much of this. And it goes right back to the 1933. And really, this is where I want to start, because the reality of it is I could take you back to 1860, whenever we became a split country under the Civil War. And we've been actually under martial law since 1860. And where's my proof in that? Well, I've got my hands on a 1967 congressional record that shows we've been under martial law for well over 100 years, and the people did not really conceive this or understand it. So it really started back at that time. But 1933 is when they did the bankruptcy on the people. But see, that bankruptcy was a fraud. But see, Roosevelt had to keep it that way. That's why he pulled this into a democracy, because under democracy, it didn't matter which party you voted for, Republican Party, Democratic Party. It was all one government, and their goal was to keep it under their control, not the people's control. And that's why we need to put this back into Republic form, and that's why you people have to be able to pick and choose who you decide you want for office, not who you're being told.
You kind of just reiterated the same thing. Let me ask you it this way to help us get caught up with your mind on this. When you let's say we wipe out all these crooked Republicans and Democrats, and we have a new body in our Congress, what would it look like? What's the difference? Paint that picture, because I'm a little bit confused, because I know in a republic you choose representatives who then finalize the final vote versus mob rule, democracy. So there's something different that you're saying, and you're losing me a little bit.
Okay. Let me put it to you this way. If we was running it under way the Federalist Papers we're talking about, under Republic form of government, you would have housewives, you would have mechanics, you would have store owners, you would have all walks of life as your legislators. What you have now is bar association. You've got lawyers that's sitting in the legislation, biggest part of them. You've got lawyers that's sitting in the judicial. You've got lawyers that's sitting in the executive. There's your democracy.
You have professional politicians.
But see, you got everybody on your on your democracy side, all working for the same goal for their own personal benefit. If you ran this thing under the Republic form, where you would bar one group from having total control, like it is right now, then you would have a variety of people with varieties of issues that would sit down and would work for the family, because you would have an automobile mechanic in there that knows something about mechanics, automobiles. You would have a housewife that knows what is needed for the housewife. You'd have store owners. You would have a variety. See, this is something that we never considered or thought about, because most of the people, again, that you picked from were handpicked from the Bar Association.
Okay, that now you're talking at a federal level, but that isn't that why we have local elections and state elections, that people can rise up and get involved in politics and move? I mean, we have a lady, Washington State, Patty Murray, used to be a school teacher, and she's now in the federal government. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I also know people who didn't start out as lawyers, although most of them are. You know, I could go down and join my city council, and I could join my county, and I could become mayor and be involved. But if I was a mechanic, how would I run my store if I'm in Washington, D.C.? I guess I'm a little bit confused as to,
okay,
you know, that, you know what I mean?
Okay, whatever you're running for these public offices, especially for those legislation, there's supposed to be a term limit on this, no more than two terms.
Oh, I agree with that. Oh,
no,
God,
no.
Yeah.
You go back into the Articles of Confederation. There's a flat out 2-term limit on this. And see, they have bypassed this.
Well, they changed
the
law.
Even on your local level, okay. Granted, I've had a dentist that I talked to that is a congressman on the local level. I went in, had a conversation with him. I asked him about some legal issues. The first words out of this gentleman's mouth, oh, you're talking to the wrong one here. You have to bring this up before our legal board with the attorneys. I says, whoa, excuse me, what did you tell me? Well, you have to take this before the attorneys that we have. I says, no, sir, you're the congressman. You may be a dentist. You're required to know what your job details. And the moment you told me that I have to talk to a lawyer because you cannot make a legal determination and you're a legislator that creates laws, we have a problem here. And he looked at me and says, you know what? You're right. I should be. I said, that's exactly right. You should. But you don't. Because why? You're relying on the legal department to sit down to decide for you what your opinion is.
Yep.
So, see, this is where it is. And that's the same thing with county commissioners. Who are the first people they go to for legal advice? They don't talk among themselves. Who's the mayor go to when he has an issue?
An attorney.
So, actually, why do we even have all these other positions when we got all these attorneys that gives all the advice and runs the counties anyhow?
Well, I mean, that's a good question, but where else are you going to go? Some people are politicians, some people are attorneys. I mean, some people are politician attorneys. I mean, how do we just rip this apart and rebuild it in this concept that you're talking about, you know, from A to Z? I mean, I guess that's always the question that always rolls through my mind when I'm listening to somebody who has a different concept of the way things should be. Okay, well, we've got this huge country with thousands of people in office and positions and 300 plus million people. How do we just make that shift? You know, that, okay, blink, now it's a different world. I mean, there's got to be a process for this to change.
Okay. Let's put this right down to the everyday or your job, you go to work. All right. Whenever you are a mechanic, store owner, whether you are a paper boy, you're required to know the job before you take it. You're required to have some type of understanding of that job before you take it. There are a lot of people out here that are qualified to be governor, to be legislators, who know what that job details. Problem of it is, you don't get a chance at it, because unless you're a bar member or you're part of the clique with the democracy side, Democratic or Republican, that's where the problem lies. They pick who they want in, and they sit down and see if you are well trained to be manipulated or not. If you're not, you don't get shot.
Yeah, I agree. There's a tremendous amount of corruption in the good old boy network. Do you think? I mean, you were talking about 1933. We also had the major legislation in 1871 that changed a lot in our country. You know, I mean, every step along the way in the Civil War changed our country tremendously. The advent of the FBI during the Prohibition days changed a lot in our country. So we've had these, we've had these milestones that have gradually moved us from we're doing a series on state authority and state sovereignty. You know, how did we start out as a colonies that actually formed a federal government to do their bidding, back then, to what we are today, where everything we do is now controlled by the federal government? You know, that's what our forefathers warned us of. I get what you're saying there. I guess I'm just trying to, I think about, like from a practical term, as a contractor, getting up and trying to do public office and work my business and do all these things. We used to have volunteer legislators. Men got up and went and did this for free at one time in their lives. It's definitely changed. So I guess on one hand, I understand what you're saying. On the other hand, I'm back to that. I'm kind of a practical guy. Like, okay, so how do we change it? It's one thing to shine a spotlight on it. It's another to go, okay, how do we make this different?
Okay. Let me answer that. I believe it's New Hampshire. New Hampshire's legislators get paid $100 a year. They work their real jobs, and they have set days throughout the year that their Congress, state legislators, convene, they deal with issues, and then they go back to their jobs.
Oh, I agree.
No, that's how it is.
No, I mean, that's awesome. But what several states, what is it, Texas is every 2 years? They convene for government business. I mean, this professional politician thing is definitely one. I'm not saying it's the only thing, but it's definitely one of the reasons we have the trouble we have. Everybody works and lives their lives, and we think we voted in people to go take care of us. And I think in 2012, we just woke up to the fact that you can't trust any of them.
And then that goes back
to my question, though, is how do we change that?
Okay.
That
comes back to the people. It comes back in to where let's sit here and say, and if I was to get into office and I would sit here and start out as presidency, number one, because we are under military law, we're not under executive orders, we're under general law, which is military.
Aren't we under maritime law also?
No, because we're under military at this point in time, because we're under martial law, and that's not maritime. Maritime's contract.
Okay, gotcha. Well, okay, wasn't that 1871 made the federal government a corporation? Wasn't there some weird stuff back then that happened? Okay.
See, what happened here in 1867, prior to that, your states were independent from the federal government.
1867
created the Reconstruction Act. And what that was, this is where the D.C. sent the feds, the military, down into the South and took over their government. And under that Reconstruction Act, all of the states had to take on the federal side of this thing. The states had to relinquish their sovereignty. They don't want to admit it, but they had to, because I put paperwork into this because I had the feds come back and tell me, oh, well, or the state, rather, we are sovereign. I says, no, sir. Didn't you forget the Reconstruction Act? And I sent it in to them. Didn't your country or your state have to sign this at that time period, relinquishing your sovereignty? And you know what? I was absolutely right.
Yeah, a lot of people said the Civil War was for one thing. I have a feeling that there's a lot more to it than most people understand.
So what we have to do is go back in and get rid of D.C. Because, see, in 1871, the Act of 1871, they took Washington Town and Georgetown. They split it and made the District of Columbia and made a federal zone out of it. They made it a corporation. They made that federal zone, that federal territory. It's no longer part of the United States itself. And if you ask anybody in Washington, D.C., they'll tell you, we're not part of the United States.
Right.
So, all right. So having that understanding that they're not part of the United States, then that makes them foreign to the rest of us. And one of the things would have to be done is D.C. would have to be dissolved and put back down to the land to where that federal zone and territory would have to be taken out and have to be part of the United States as we know it from East Coast, West Coast, North, South, not under their terminology.
Right. Now, why can you – this is now, you see, this is actually a fascinating topic to me because – I've just scratched the surface of this recently. And why did they do this? What was their sinister reasoning or their logical reasoning for doing this?
Well, see, this went back in because of the bankers. Because, see, back at that time period, we was going through a bankruptcy also at that time. And Lincoln was aware of this. And so they created the bankers came in and wanted a separation with the capital away from the people to create zones, because this is where the 12 military districts comes in. So when they're talking the district, these are military districts from that time period. If you understand that history, you know I'm right.
Yeah, well, I guess I'm curious is, I'm one of those, a lot of people, you sound like a fact guy, and which is cool because that's important that people like you are doing what you're doing. I'm kind of a why guy. I want to know why they did it. I want to know what was their strategy.
The why they did it was to turn around and to slowly throughout history start putting the people into a servitude position. Because if you go back and start checking the history of all this stuff out, they did not do it overnight. They did it over a period of years. Because they just came out of a revolution to where they just got rid of one tyrant, and now we were coming back into other tyrants, but they had to do it slowly. The states were independent from one another, because if you check case law prior to that time period, when the presidency or the federal government tried to come into the state told them to take a hike. After they did the 1867, now the states became part of it, and now the federal government controls the state, because when you control the state, you also control the income of the monetary side of this thing.
The revenue. I was just thinking that.
They control the revenue. They control the trade. They control everything. So throughout the years, this has been a thing of strangulation on the system, on the people, because, see, the Bar Association was still alive and well at that time period. Because, see, the bar came in from England in the late 1700s, and it was at 1883, something like that, is when the Bar Association took really good hold here in this country. But see, we've always had lawyers in there because Benjamin Franklin was a lawyer.
Sure.
And this is part of the history that we pulled up. Some of these other Patriot guys who signed the Declaration were lawyers. They were all esquires.
Well, Well, excuse me, gentlemen. I have a couple folks on hold. First, I will let in area code 208 if you have any questions for myself or Chris or for Mr. Class. Go ahead. So I'm going to open up the mic for 208. If you could just give us your name, location, and what's on your mind. Yes, 208.
Is that my mic?
That is yours.
Sure. Oh, geez. Well, what a surprise. American Bar Association, I thought, came in 1878. I could be wrong.
Yeah?
I think they
did. 1878 is when they came in.
Well, that was significantly after the American Revolution anyway, but...
And sir, who are we talking to right now? You didn't give us your name or location.
I'm in Idaho. This is Floyd calling you.
Oh, okay. I should have noticed. Okay, 208. Now it's coming to me. Sorry, Floyd.
Yeah.
I didn't know if you wanted to just... Go ahead,
Your chat. Or read your chat.
No, I've been all over the place, so I will go look at my chat.
Read the mail, huh?
Yeah, well, I'm on like three different things on here.
Well, the American Bar Association, I think, was August of 1878. I don't know, 20 states, something like that. Not up in New York, actually. And I believe that was the first meeting of them. It really wasn't much of an association until the 1920s, though, is when it really became what we would recognize as it. In fact, in the western states, I think a lot of them did not get bar associations until the turn of the century, 1910 or so.
Mm-hmm.
I was just making that observation.
Sure. Okay, the Bar Association came in on August 24th, 1878, and they went down to Sarasota Springs in New York. And that is where 100 lawyers got together. But the Bar Association over in England was long before that.
So that was their platform.
That was their platform.
Right. So, you know, I guess, I mean, and this is all really, like I said, you know, I don't want to keep drawing back to this, but that's just the way my mind works. And you know, things happen. You know, we got a country that's forming. We have a country that, you know, has gone through wars and expansion in Western territory. You know, we didn't have Alaska yet in those days. You know, gold rushes in California, you know, all in those early 1800s. And so was it a sinister move every time people put something together to try to improve the world they live in, or were there a series of things that added up that other people took advantage of later on? You know, that's, I guess, is where, you know, are we just paranoid of a total sinister plan for the last 150 years to totally turn us into a oligarchy, or were there some things that were sinister and other things that were just, you know, the thing of the day that made sense to do?
Well, what you're dealing with, if you stop and think, after we came out of the Civil War, we were still under martial law because Lincoln never went back in. Well, he died, but Andrew Johnson, they never repealed the state of emergency. Under that state of emergency, think about what happened shortly after the Civil War. We started moving west. We started attacking
right.
Native Americans. As mm-hmm. long as we had a war gone, we was under a state of emergency in this country constantly. Now, was it coincidental or was it pre-planned? Because it was always the D.C. that made the deals with the Native Americans and then broke the treaties because they allowed certain things to happen to create a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you start looking back at our time period now, and you start looking back at all this, and you start seeing how things played out, and you start understanding what we discovered, what we understand today, and you look at what they're doing to us today – they had a good platform of how to deal with the slaves that they brought in. They had how to deal with Native Americans, how to put them on reservations, how to round them up. They've had years and years of experience of what works, what don't work, how to come back and do it, how not to do it. Is that sinister? Is it something that's coincidental? Look at the history and look what they're doing, and then answer that for yourself.
Well, I think a lot of us have been trying to do that in our lives, and really trying to weigh out the difference between, you know, this was the evolution of a civilization from an experiment, you know, that was launched in the late 1700s, in this great experiment, you know, of freedom. You know, how much of it was great works, and, you know, that, I think all of us are trying to figure that out. I think that's where a lot of us are at in our lives, because for me personally, when I look at what's going on in my country, and I look at the, you know, the two-headed monster called the RNC-DNC, that you can't see a dime difference between the two of them, you know, and you look at this stuff and you go, wow, that we've been taken advantage of for I don't know how long. You know, does it go back to that point in time? Because I know that in my research and studies the Reconstruction Act was a big one. You know, I know that the Civil War was the turning point, the Reconstruction Act, the whole FBI being able to cross state borders. You know, you just see step by step by step. And so we wonder, where did it start, where did it end? And then that final question is, well, how do you unravel it? Because it's a big, dangerous machine right now. And that we're no longer dealing with just America. We're dealing with all the people and international corporations and other countries that we're indebted to. So now we got a real mess, and you don't know who controls who anymore.
Well, see, this is part of the problem with what we're dealing with, is they have been so much that has been pre-laid out. Because you got to stop and remember, these people wrote history books back at this time. They wrote what was feasible, what wasn't feasible. Look at what happened in Germany, and whenever Hitler come in, look what happened with Russia. Look what happened in China and some of these other foreign countries. One day, everything's fine, and in the middle of the night, you get your door kicked in, and your whole life changed that next day. Is it the fact that the people in this country, we've had it really easy in this country. We've had a layback. We never had any major uprising in this country. And the people are so laid back, we don't want to believe the worst. But when it starts knocking on your door, that's not the time to decide, oops, we need to start looking now at what has happened.
Well, I think NDAA, the Patriot Act and NDAA woke quite a few people up, thanks to, especially the Fed and the NDAA. Dr. Paul, you know, Ron Paul,
yep,
has been harping on this for years and years and years, going, you know, you guys don't understand who these people are and how they control our economy and how they create a secondary tax with inflation, you know, and we've had these cycles of crashes, you know, boom crash, that seem to be accelerating since the dot-bomb boom. People keep losing huge chunks of their retirement or their fortunes, and it keeps consolidating into, you know, smaller and smaller, divisions. Like, how many major corporations control everything in the world is a very small, I think it's 5, 6, 7 of them now, where it used to be dozens and dozens and dozens of corporations. So there's definitely, we're coming to some kind of point in history where it's getting kind of scary. You know, the question is now, you know, what do we do about it? You know, can we go back? You know, can we get back to the Constitution? Can we get back to, you know, a balanced state, you know, where states have their proper sovereignty, because there is dual sovereignty between the states and the federal government? Can we actually get back to that without a major catastrophe? You know, I mean, you're in this thing all the time. I've heard about you before from other friends of mine. You know, so it's great to have you on here, because we can get some of your insights and research.
Well, see, what you are looking at as long as we stay with the Republican and the Democrats under the democracy, nothing's ever going to change because you still have the same force in effect. You have to change the form of the government that we're dealing with, not the parties, the form of government. And as long as you're going to have the democracy, you know, the Democrats, the Republicans, you're going to have the Tea Party running under the democracy, you're going to have the constitutional side running under the democracy, they are pretty much controlled. But see, nobody's ever brought this issue up. Nobody's ever brought it out to this point of view of laying it out and explaining it to the people, because who ever gave any thought about this? For the last, since what, 100 years? Who's giving any thought?
Yes, it seems like we've been pretty busy just trying to move forward into a modern society with the Industrial Revolution, right through technology changes to the telephone, electricity, telephone, automobile, computers. We've just been running full bore, you know, and all of a sudden we woke up one day and here we are. And now people are. And I want to add this, because we interviewed the Constitution Party people, and, you know, just recently, in fact, in the last couple of days, you know, Virgil Goode and Jim Clymer, and had some incredible discussions on the Constitution and you know, their platform of what they believe. And it's very different than what I'm hearing from the RNC and DNC, you know, and so that was a breath of fresh air. So, you know, I want to be fair to, you know, people like that, because they're speaking a talk, you know, that's very, not exactly the same as you, but very similar to what you're saying, that, you know, we got to get back to the Constitution. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's okay. This time I do have another caller who'd like to chime in, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to let 602 in, and then Rod, if you'd like to continue your answer for Chris, and then 602, if you have a question or comment, chime in after that. And I want to apologize to Floyd there on 208 that I didn't get the area code and connected with you, because I know you've been on a couple times. So I want to apologize for not recognizing that. So at this time, I'm going to let in 602, and then Rod, if you could continue on with answering what Chris just had to ask, and then 602, you will be the floor will be open to you to ask your question or your comment. So. 602, you're in, but go ahead, Rod. Are you there, Rod?
Go ahead
with the answer for Chris. I just wanted to get 602 in before too long, because they're on hold for a little while.
Okay. See, the thing of it is, from what if you've listened to me, I'm very point blank. I'm very historical. When I talk, I hand you to congressional records. I tell you where all this information is at. And we have heard all these different parties talk about the Constitution. We're talking about, oh, we need to do this. But the moment they get into office, the whole attitude changes. Why? Because they still have that one problem. They still have those people in the background that come in, like Jesse Ventura. They had a conversation with him. And see, and I have talked to several different congressmen throughout the years that we've been dealing with. And when we started touching on some of this, the first words out of their mouth is, we can't do that because our families have or will be threatened if we do. I said, excuse me, you're Congress. Why don't you do something about it? You got Homeland Security for this. Well, we really can't get involved in this. And see, this would be one of the biggest things. If I was put in office, that's one of the things that would not happen. Because, number one, you can't threaten me and you can't intimidate me. Killing my family, if you want to do that, you know, it's like I told them before, they're Christians. They're going to be in a better place than they are now. So blackmailing me and threatening me don't work.
Right.
And we've had so much of this. And if the military was coming in, and they was to sit down and say, okay, Mr. Klass, we heard you got in as president. We're here to escort you. The military and I would have a nice conversation about anybody that would pay me a visit, is that they would be paid a visit, and we would get back on handing the government back over to the people. Because it's going to take the people. We got to change the party. As long as you've got the people running under the democracy side, the Queen of England, the Vatican, these people are running this country. Not us. They are. And we have to get rid of this. But see, nobody's willing to step up to the plate. Even as good as what Ron Paul is, and he is good, he would even have a problem trying to switch things over. Because he too is at the place where family means a lot to him. And I'm not saying that it all means the same to me, but ladies and gentlemen, we're at war. And if anybody's been in combat, you understand what it means to have your buddy held. You don't surrender because you and him are both going to be land.
Okay. Right. Well, let me ask you this. Let me tie this, because as we're talking here, I'm getting this flash of the Fed in my mind, because when you talk about these controllers or these controlling factors, I mean, that's a huge issue. What's your take on all that?
Well, hold on, Chris. But let's get back to that question a little bit. That's okay, Chris. I want to give 602 a chance to chime in, but real quick, 602, before I do that, I want to introduce another member of the Bard's Logic panel here, and that is Chris, and he also has a show, which is not Chris. Why do I keep calling Rex Chris? But we have Rex here from the Tex and Rex show, and Rex, if you'd like to say hello, and then 602, we can chime in with your statement or question.
Hello, Robert, and Mr. Class, and he calls me Chris because I guess I, too, am a troglodyte like Chris.
I don't know what it is. I guess because I talk to Chris a couple times a day, so, at least lately, so I'm just so, you know, I'm kind of getting conditioned to be saying, hey, Chris, so go ahead, Rex.
So I just jumped on, so why don't you guys continue? I'm still catching
sure,
up.
Sure thing. Well, okay, 602, if you give a name, location, and what's on your mind.
Hi, Rob. This is Kim.
Oh,
hi. You probably know me from Ghost Fighter Radio.
Yes.
Okay.
I have a question. What's your thoughts on Obama and Rob Me regarding so far of this election, and what could you do about it?
All right. My personal opinion, I think they need to be shipped back to their motherland and deported, okay? Because neither one of them hold actually citizenship in this country. Even under their own corporate constitution, and I know we get into this, neither one of them meets the qualification under their own corporate constitution, because last time I checked, Kenya was not a territory and neither was Mexico.
Right.
What about Kolob?
About who?
Kolob. You said ship them back to the mothership. Isn't that from Planet Kolob?
Yep. Send them back.
Oh, I see Rex got some rest. Okay.
I'm a firm believer. These people need to be held for charges. They really, truly do. Because what they have done to this country, knowing full well what they were doing, they need to be held accountable. And those that know me, this is what I do. I go after accountability on these people. They need to be held accountable. And anything that Obama has done through executive orders, knowing full well he doesn't have the authority to sit in that office, would all be canceled. So would a lot of other executive orders.
Right.
People don't understand executive orders do not apply to the citizen. Executive orders only apply to the administration, and that is not how they're being put out.
Mm-hmm. Is that because they're in the 10-mile square?
Correct.
Okay.
And that's also because of the Reconstruction Act, because that executive order applies to every single governor in all 50 states, because they come underneath that.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Oh, you didn't know that.
No. But I've listened to you many times, Rod. Many times.
Well, I appreciate it. Like I said, with what you guys have done on bringing me onto your show on Tuesday nights and broadcasting, we've reached out, and we have increased and educated a lot of people out on your show and out on ours.
Right.
I'm sorry, Kim. I didn't mean to step on you. Do you have another question there? Hello?
Kim?
Yes, what? Sorry.
Do you have another question there? I didn't mean to step on you. I was starting to pull him, go back and ask a question.
Oh, no. I was going to let Rex take his turn.
I have a turn?
But, ladies and gentlemen, the bottom line is what Obama has done, what Romney is running for, ladies and gentlemen, it's rhetoric. Neither one of these two hold the proper qualification. Neither one of them is interested in bringing the Constitution in, because if Obama truly was, and he's supposed to be a constitutional lawyer. Now,
but he's not.
You know, he was supposed to be for what was put out.
Right.
But if he was a constitutional lawyer, then he knows better for what he's doing. He knows better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the same thing with Romney. Romney is, with his position, he knows better. They're not interested in fixing the problem. They're interested in strangling the people. Because the thing of it is, with what we've talked about on our show, we have gold being shipped to China. We have oil being shipped to Japan, Russia, the Middle East. Why isn't any of this being used for the natural resources to pay our economy? Why is it all this is all hidden money? It's the people. Get right back to the bankruptcy. It's your signature. And we've been able to prove this. It's your signature that is the collateral, not the natural resources. Where's this stuff going? Why aren't they doing anything about this? No, I can't believe that these people run this country and are not aware of any of this, not with all the advisors. And here I am, a lonely guy out here in, you know, High Shoals, North Carolina, and we are broadcasting this out across the Internet, and I know the feds are listening, and we know it's going back to them. So they do know, but they're not doing anything. That's why we got to put this back into the people's hands. The Democrats and the Republicans aren't going to do it. Democracy's not going to do it. It's going to take one of us to come in here and go do it. But the problem of it is, y'all don't have anybody who's willing to step up to the plate. And, Kim, you know me for a long time.
Right.
The type of work that we're putting out. Who else out here compares to me for what we're doing?
Nobody but you.
Well, I'm still trying to figure it out what we're doing. I'm still getting caught up to your mindset and what the plan is, I guess, is where I'm. We went back. I'm sorry, I don't mean to. I want to retract back because Robert brought Kim in and brought Rex in. I just had asked you about the Fed and your position on the Fed and how this ties into what you're talking about.
Their system would have to be overhauled. Because, see, there's one thing about here. Majority of the people out here will sit here and ask, do you think these people know? Do you think these people know? I'm going to tell you right up front, yes, they do know. And the reason why, because throughout the years, I've dealt with FBI, I've dealt with federal marshals. They've listened, they've researched, they've come back, and we've talked. And they said, Rod, we got one problem. Our problem is, who do we take them to get this enforced? That is our problem. We do have people within these agencies that would like to step up to the plate but can't because they don't have anybody that they can. And what few judges would don't want to give up their retirement, so they're going to go along with the system because they don't want to lose out. And again, even some of these people have been threatened. And see, that's where the issue comes in. There's nobody out here that defends the people. And that's one of the things that would have to be changed. Those who would want the system changed can stay in office. Those who don't, we'll put them on a one-way ticket over to England without a passport, and they could stay there.
Right. What do you think of what's going on with Israel, what Obama's doing with Israel? What would you do?
What would I do? Number one, I would pull all of our troops out of the Middle East because we don't belong over there, because history tells you these people have been fighting for a lot longer than the United States has ever been a country. They've been fighting for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Our military over there is creating problems because we're in here for an ecological survey of what they have so we can exploit their country. We need to pull our troops out and pull our people out and let these people go kill each other. If that's what they want to do, fine. But they would live a lot better without us, and we'd live a lot better without them.
True.
Because if you really stop and think, back in the 60s, 50s, this country, back in the 40s, this country was self-sufficient. That's what I explain to people. United States is not like Germany or England or France or Spain. These countries are the size of our states. We're more like Russia. We're more like China. We're self-sufficient. We've got all the natural resources to run this country. I don't say we don't help, but we don't need to be over here aggravating and creating a problem like we have, because we want them. Because, see, right now the Federal Reserve is controlling this. Because the Federal Reserve is actually controlling our economy, and they're dictating. And that's one of the things that would change.
Well, Rod, one of the things that you and I talked about briefly when we were on the phone is you brought up a concept for the concept of the state as corporation. I think this would be a good point to get into
1871.
That.
1871. Well, see, this is what I have discovered here with all the lawsuits that I put against North Carolina. The Attorney General and the Administrative Court, 4 out of 4 cases, has come back in and has admitted that the police department, the sheriff department, the prison department, the tax department, and all these other public officials, well, they're not really public officials. They're all private entities. Well, if they're private entities, then they're part of the corporation. You're not part of the state. And see, that corporation would have to be destroyed. All the Catholic counts would have to be destroyed. Because all that money would have to come back out too. But remember, we're not dealing with money. We're dealing with Federal Reserve notes. We're dealing with credit line, people's credit line that they've stolen. They stole their identity. All this would have to be given back to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So the corporation would have to be dissolved, and it would be, if I was president coming in, I would call all the governors in, and we would have a nice conversation. You got one of two options. Either you can be a governor or you can be unemployed. Either you run a state as a state, or you won't have a state because you will be unemployed, and I'll have charges brought up on you, because we've got enough right now to bring every charges up on every single governor. I brought charges into the Coast Guard against them, and we've got the evidence to prosecute them.
Oh, wow.
This is part of that paperwork I did here about a year and a half ago against the Coast Guard, because I brought charges up against the governors in their commander-in-chief status. Not as governors, as commander-in-chief. Every one of these governors have committed treason. One reason is because they've allowed the National Guard to be pulled out of their state and sent overseas. That violates the Dick Act of 1902. Because the National Guard is never supposed to be pulled out of their state.
Well, what about the UN? Pardon me.
Big pardon? UN?
Yeah.
Well,
they're being involved in our stuff.
All right. The UN, we would have a conversation with them also, is that they don't run this country. The people run this country. The president makes sure that they don't come in and get involved. Because if you stop and think, Hillary Clinton, when Arizona did what they did, Hillary Clinton went straight to the UN under that International Organization Immunities Act of 1945. That's racist. And you know what? That act was never passed legitimately because it was done on December 6th, whenever Congress was on break. It was done by a small, minute people. See, all this stuff would have to come back in. But see, the problem of it is you don't have a lot of people out here with the knowledge of the historical side that I have to be able to come back in and correct a lot of this.
True. Very true. Rex?
Yes, Kim, I'm here.
Do you have anything to say?
He's here.
Well, he's just caught up.
Well, I want to hear. I would like to hear. Go ahead, Rex, and then I'd like to, chime in on.
No, please go ahead. I was just going to say I haven't really gotten caught up much, but I did hear something about sheriffs, and aren't sheriffs essentially the elected representatives of the people?
Yes, they are. They're supposed to be. But I tell you what, I want you to do. I want each of you go back to your administrative code for your state. What I discovered here in North Carolina is I got into the sheriff's department under the administrative code, and there has been so much repealed on his ability to function by the state. They have stripped him right down to almost nothing.
You mean like Joe Arpaio, my sheriff?
Yep. Go back in and start researching your administrative code. And I don't mean your statutes at large. We've got two books here. Here in North Carolina, we have what is known as North Carolina General Statutes. I found North Carolina Administrative Code. That is a different set of books. That controls the agencies. That defines what an agency is, what their job description is. This is like the code of federal regulations. You get into this, this is the regulations of all these agencies. But I also turn around and found out by reading this, and it will point blank tell you under explanation in every single volume, it says explanation. And you read down, it tells you that the code of federal regulation is nothing more than prima facie evidence. That's it. So we're not running under real laws. We're running under prima facie. We're running under a presumption that we have something legitimate.
Okay, Rod. What I like to do at this time, two things. One is I want to go.
Hello.
Sorry about that. It's Robert. I'd like to go more in depth of the republic form of government as we talked about before, and how an election of that nature would look like, and then also how could for 2012 that type of election be successful, in which you would garner votes to gain the presidency.
Okay, what Robert and I talked about was this. Under their constitution, whether it's a corporate constitution, whether it's an organic constitution, under what goes in for presidency, the people have to do the choosing. And what I have told people is this. Go in and do a absentee ballot, make copies of it. If you go into the election board, sit down, bring other people in with you that's going to put my name down, witness it, take it over to the board members, says, look, we are not accepting your democracy. We want a republic form of government. This is the gentleman that we're wanting in. We have the right to pick who we want, not who we're being told to choose from. Now, the bottom line is you go back and have a recount on this. It takes the people, because the true government is the republic form of this thing, not the democracy. And if we ran this thing under the republic form, all legitimacy would have to come over to this side of the fence, because democracy has never been legitimate. That's not the proper form of government. So the voice of the people can be heard. The voice of the people would have to sit here and raise up. It's like Prohibition. 80,000 people during Prohibition got rid of Prohibition because 80,000 people spoke. That congressman out of Illinois back in the first Gulf War made a comment. 135,000 emails flooded his office. The comment he made is, I will never apologize. 135 emails later, he was on C-SPAN backstroking. The people are going to have the voice heard. The people are going to have to come in and say, this is our choice, not yours. We want this one. For all the years, you've told us who we had to have. We decide now who we want. And until the people stand up and do it, that's the only way it's going to get done. But see, by running it under the Republic, it's never been done. Nobody's ever did it. So technically, if we run it this way, they would have to give it to this side of the fence because they don't have a choice. That's the law. We are a republic, not a democracy.
Well, yeah, but a republic elects electors, and then electors, you get your 270 electors, then they vote for you and make you president. You have your head count, which is your democracy, and they vote. Now, you only have 10 states that have no rural write-in states. About 22, 24 of them have registration rules and different little hoops that you have to jump for, and they all have individual rules in their states saying we will or won't accept a write-in. Then you have several states that absolutely won't accept anything but what's on the ballot. They just throw it away. So, you could have – I mean, how are you going to beat that? You know, you have an election coming up here November 6th. You'd have to have a lot of people get up and do something right now to make that all happen. And then how do you combat – you know, you talk about – everybody registering their vote and making a copy of it, but, you know, after they'll, you know, put one of the two kings in power, I mean, how do you stop it?
Okay, the problem of it is, what you said is absolutely correct under the democracy side of this thing. What their rules are under that democracy side. There's nothing up here for the Republic side. Like I said, this is a whole new adventure. This is like me coming in and being Galileo and telling the Catholic Church that the earth is not the center of the universe anymore. This is a whole new setup. It's never been done. If they run it under Republic form, they would have to bow to the proper jurisdiction of the proper government.
But how would we go about changing the paradigm and changing from the democratic form to the Republic?
You're going to have to – the people are going to have to –
how would you make that shift?
Yeah. Again, you're going to have to start it out on the state level, and you're going to have to get rid of the Bar Association. No bar attorneys for public office, not for legislation. They want to be judicial. That is iffy. But they cannot run in legislation because it is the majority, and they can't run under the executive. And that comes right back to, we need people like you and me out here running for these offices and getting the people to put us in. The reality of it is, if you want to start at the local level, and I've told people this, if you will start at the city level and county level, the municipality and the county, if you control city council, you can control county commissioners, you control the entire country. And the reason why is this. The rule of thumb, wherever the injury is at, is where you are tried. Is that correct? Hello?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I said, the rule of thumb, wherever the injury is where you are tried, right?
Supposedly.
If you were injured in your town, isn't that where you would hold the court hearing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you control city council and you control the county commissioners, city council controls the municipal court. The county commissioners control the county court. So if you control the court, you control the judge, you control the prosecutor. In your local government, you do not have to have a law, a lawyer, or an attorney to sit in there as a judge. All you have to have is someone who could keep decorum in a courtroom. A jury is supposed to make all the legal decisions, not a judge. So if you control this on a city level and on a county level, and you control the appeals court, you now control the entire country for the simple reason, where's all these legislators and all these other public officials come from? The municipality and the county. So if they are in Washington, D.C., and they are committing a crime, and this is one of the debates I had with some congressmen, well, you're not my constituent. Well, excuse me, do you sign a bill? Yes. Does it affect me in North Carolina when you are a representative in California? Well, yes, then I'm your constituent. So if you sign a bill that affects me across this country, then that means I can bring you into my local court and try you for injuries. So if we control the municipality and the county in the appeals court, then we could turn around and take down the Supreme Court for the state. We could turn around and take the federal court down in your state. We could turn around and take down the Supreme Court. Now, your municipal court, your county court, and your county appeals court would be the only three courts left in this country that would have absolute power, because all the other ones could be removed because they violated the constitutional position. Because as a Supreme Court judge, you're supposed to rule on constitutional decision. There's no such thing as a split on a Second Amendment right. Either you have it or you don't. There's no such thing as a split on a freedom of speech, freedom of religion. There's not a split on this. Either we have it or you don't. So anytime you've got a split decision, you've got half or that partial that is either violated the Constitution or a group that upheld the Constitution. You can't have a split on a constitutional issue. So if you control the county and the city, you can control the country. So you don't have to go out much farther than that. And then you start working your way up to start putting people in the governor's office, start putting people into the legislator's office. And start it this way. It's a grassroots movement. It can be done if the people would do it. It's real simple.
And that's kind of, you know.
Sorry, Robert.
Go ahead, Chris. Okay. Well, then that's what I was trying to get to is, you know, one of the things we talk about a lot here on the show is about the grassroots and how important it is to get the grassroots back into it, and the efforts that the RNC and the DNC are doing to, you know, to till the access of the grassroots in the election process.
Well, it's possible, but again, it goes right back to the people. If the people will stand there and allow it, it will. If the people will speak up, it won't. Like I said, 80,000 people changed prohibition back in the 1920s. 80,000 people sounds like an awful lot, but you sit here and divide 80,000 people into 3,333 counties, and you don't come up with, you know, that's not a very big group of people. Problem of it is, you got 80,000 people going into 90 federal courts. That's a lot.
It is very confusing. I guess the question I ask, because you're actually running for president, so how are we going to change this whole system between now and November 6th? I mean, how would you get elected? I'm back to that thing of, this is really cool to talk about, you know what I mean, this whole you know, complex issue, but, you know, people are getting ready to walk to the ballot box. I mean, what's your plan to get millions of people to vote for you and to make this transition happen? You know, how are you going to make this happen in, 40 days?
Okay, well, I've been working on this for well over a year. The problem is, being on your show, talking to your audience, you got a live audience, email is a lot of it. have the people get into my archives, have them look up my name on the internet, see what I've done, see what I stand for. You'd be surprised how much email could go out and how email could change history, with the people understanding that there is a third choice, and they understand what I'm doing, what I'm talking about, and the fact that I'm actually backing up everything I sit here and say, not like a lot of these other groups out here that leave you sort of hanging. I have a historical background approving everything. So to answer your question, you know, some people say I don't stand a chance, but on the other hand, I also believe that God can do wonders through email and through the internet and through other radio broadcasts. And I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah, I know. Speaking of email, I do have some things in my email that I'm actually scrolling through right now that I believe that Kim has sent me. And I've got some, she sent me a lot of links here. Unfortunately, I've not had the opportunity to look nearly through many of them, you know, that she sent. And there is a whole lot here. So I guess what I could do is just start sending some of these links into the chat for the folks to look at. And then, of course, some of the folks here on the panel, I could send them some of the links as well. But I do have an email here where, and thank you, Kim, for this information. I just had a chance to go through all of this, and there is a long list here of links that I definitely could give out to the folks.
Well,
and I believe
that,
that's what you're talking about, Rob, in part at least.
That's from Ray Server, you know, all the stuff he does on his show, what he talks about and everything.
Oh, okay.
Correct, Rod?
Yep. See, this is what's why we have been broadcasting out on the internet, and with what we're putting out for knowledge, because we have ham operators that's broadcasting us. We're international because we've got international listeners that come on. We've got people all over the United States. I've got truckers. I've got lawyers, I have got doctors, I've got all kinds of professional people that have contacted me that through party that has contacted me. So it isn't firsthand. I'm getting people that's like four or five parties back that they've said, we've heard about you. So my concept of actually running through the internet, it may be far-fetched, but is it really? Because you stop and think how much email you get from all different people and what it's all about, especially with what Kim has sent over to you. And, you know, Kim sends it out to people, and they send it out to people, because a lot of my phone calls, and which is why I got into trouble here with my wife, the amount of phone calls that I get from all over the country, from people. So, you know, it's feasible and it's very possible that the grassroots could pick this up and be the silent one that could come into these elections underneath Obama and Romney and sit down and say, okay, enough's enough. This is the man we want. We want him in, and we're running with him because we've did the research. We know what Obama's doing. We know what Romney is talking about. I also, with what I have, you've seen what I'm talking about and what we're exposing. We're sitting on really the only answer to fix the problem for this country. Nobody else is wanting to fix the problem. They want to increase the problem.
Well, not all of them. I mean, Ron Paul wants to fix it. Virgil Goode wants to fix it. I believe Gary Johnson wants to fix it.
But see, they're limited because of the position that they're put into. And they have been in politics for how long? And what is some of their background? And I know Ron Paul is probably the best one out here. But even he has some background that could come back in and prevent him from really crossing over. and actually coming into this thing.
Hmm. Interesting.
As good as he is, don't get me wrong, as good as he is, he's been in politics for how long?
40 years. He's
okay.
been fighting for liberty for 40 years.
Okay, but the thing of it is, you got to go back in through that 40 years, how much brainwashing has he had to put up with?
Ron Paul? I would argue that Ron Paul has not been brainwashed. He's the one that single-handedly almost brought down the Republican establishment within the
okay.
party.
But all I'm saying is, you know, like I said, he's one of the best ones out here. You know, if he could actually get it off, I would step off to the side. But if it comes down between Obama and Romney, because they're going to push him out the door, you need a third offer here. And right now, if he doesn't get it, you don't have a third option.
I think we got a third, fourth, and fifth option. It's just tough to beat the established parties, but that's what we're trying to talk about here. I mean, I think that the most viable strategy is to just block them from getting the 270 electoral votes that they need.
Well, again, because of them being under the democracy side of this, I think that's where the problem's going to come in, because it would be easy to sit down. Because look what they did to Ron Paul. He had six, and then they turned around and kicked it up. He had to have eight.
Well, that's not democracy. That's thievery. I mean, the process
well,
works.
That's exactly right. And that's why... why we're looking at the Republic's form on this thing. Like I said, do I really stand a chance? That's really up to the people. That's really up to the people whether I stand a chance or not.
Well, that's true for anything in a democratic process.
Yes, that's up to the people.
It's how do we reach the people that matters, not that it is up to the people. We know it's up to the people. The question is, how do you wake the people up and get them motivated?
Well, that is where the issue comes in, but I think a lot of the grassroots, they're starting to wake up. They're starting to understand that there is some definitely major, major issues that they, for 10 years, they stayed asleep. It's like whenever Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. Their comment was, we just woke a sleeping giant, and that's what's happening here. The giant is starting to wake up. And the democracy side is getting real nervous.
I got to be honest with you. I missed some of the show, so I'm not familiar with what you mean by democracy side. I don't quite get that, and I apologize for not being here earlier.
Okay, you only have one form of government that's running right at the moment, and that is democracy. You don't have a republic form of government. You got a Republican Party, and you got a Democratic Party, but you only have a democracy running in this country. You don't have a republic. Because if you did, then we'd have two forms of government we don't have.
Well, but didn't the Founding Fathers essentially give us two forms of government, a democracy and a republic, just as the way they gave us dual sovereignty between the states and the federal government? I think that was their genius scheme to keep things in balance.
Well, the Constitution gave you a republican form of government. It didn't give you a democracy. That came from Roosevelt.
I'm pretty sure that there, you know, I mean, if we define a democracy as popular election, they certainly did. I mean, the House of Representatives is essentially democratic. The Senate used to be Republican. At the state level, things are democratic. At the federal level, things are Republican. So I think it's both. It's the issue of dual sovereignty. I mean, I think that they set it up as a balance in order to keep anybody from tipping the scales. I'm not saying the scales aren't tipped. I'm just saying that's how they set it up.
That may be how they set it up, but that is not how it's defined whenever you get into the military training manual 2000-25. It gives you a whole new definition of what a republic form of government is and what a democracy is.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that a military training manual only applies to the military. It doesn't change the Constitution.
Well, what it did, it laid it out and explained. Like I said, I understand what you're saying, but the bottom line really boils down to is we're really running under a democracy. We're running under mob rule because, see, the reason why I'm saying that is because since 1860, we have never had a Congress. After 1860, 1862, 63, we started running under committees. And the committees are sitting here running the country, not a Congress. because under the Jefferson's manual, it gets in and it tells you that when they put a bill on the floor, it has to be before the whole Senate. Everybody has to sit there. It has to be read three separate times on three separate instances. It has to be voted on. And if you ever watch C-SPAN when they're putting a bill up, it is totally empty except for just a couple people talking. And everything, if you go back and look at it, everything is ran under committee and not run under the Congress. It may said from the Senate and the House of Representatives, but they're all committee bills.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're talking about the way they do things versus the way they should do things. But, I mean, there's been no official change to the Republican or Democratic forms of government as far as vis-a-vis the Constitution, other than the 17th Amendment, which changed the Senate from a Republican election by the states to a Democratic election by the population of the states. But other than that, I think that legally the form is still the same.
Well, I can debate you with this because, like I said, from what we're sitting here showing, everything is strictly under a it's mob rule on their side. Because if the people really had control over this, if people really had control, we would not be under a state of emergency. We would not have a president in a dictatorship, and we would not have a Congress that would be scared to death of the president.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that they're necessarily scared to death of the president, although he has definitely absorbed powers that don't belong to him. But I think that they're just they're working with him because it's convenient for them. I don't think that they're doing it out of fear. I think the fear comes from the guys that own the Federal Reserve Bank.
Well, that right there is part of the big issue too. But the bottom line is Congress could come back in, and if they would call Congress back in, strip the president of his emergency powers and put him back in as a figurehead to where he's only dealing with foreign relations. Because, see, the president is supposed to be going through the Senate before he does anything. He's supposed to be getting approval by the Senate. And there's a lot of stuff he's not getting approval on. He's just going through and he's ramming it down their throat.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, I think that's the problem. We're talking about the way they're running things versus the way things are supposed to be run.
So actually, we're not really running, even under a democracy, we're running back under a socialist communistic party.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what they're looking for. But I mean, I still think that the levers of democracy and republic are still here. We just have to use them.
Well,
the Constitution hasn't been abolished; it's just not being applied.
Well, again, that goes right back to the people. The people are going to have to wake up. And the people are going to have to make a determination on this. And that's part of what we're on here for, to help bring some of this stuff up, give them a little bit of understanding and knowledge on it, and hopefully wake them up.
Yeah. That's what we're talking about, the strategy to wake people up.
Yep.
So
that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get the people to where they can understand and start getting them woke up. Because, see, we need to cut the power of the presidency. We need to get the power back into Congress where it belongs and out of the judicial side. Because the Judicial Department has way too much controlling power over what's going on in this country. The president
has. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So these things would have to be changed. But do you see Obama doing this or Romney coming in and doing this?
Nope.
No. Of course not. That's why we're not voting for them.
And like I said, no, Ron Paul's good, but I'm not real sure how much Ron Paul could actually pull off with this.
Well, I'm not so sure what any one man can pull off with this. This is going to require a multi-pronged effort, but it would be nice to have a president who actually thinks the Constitution binds his power down.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's one of the things with the historical side of what we got into on our show is why I decide to make the effort here. You know, I have nothing to lose if I don't win. We got everything to win if I do get put in, because it can be put back into the people's hands. And, you know, many of the things that we've talked about is what Iceland did. they got rid of the banksters and all debts were forgiven. All debts were forgiven. The people would have a better understanding of what the state of emergency was in the bankruptcy on how bad the people got ripped off.
Right.
See, this is something that we really need to get the people, and this would come out, and it would be explained to the people on what has happened, and there would be a forgiveness here of all mortgages, all debts of every kind, and those that created the problem is that these FEMA camps are set up. I'm a firm believer this is who they are actually set up for, and if I was put in, it would be who they were set up for. Because at this point in time, I don't want them out of this country, really. I'd like to have them set up to where they could all be tried by the people. And this is where the people – see, if this is something that the people don't realize. The jury has more power than that judge. A jury has the ability to create law. The jury has the ability to bring charges against that judge and that prosecutor – for misconduct in that courtroom.
Well, I agree, but I don't think they can create law. I think they can merely adjudicate the law.
Well, the thing is, with the jury, if you really understand the power of the jury, the moment that judge tells them, I will tell you how the law is to be interpreted, well, you just tampered with the jury, and now we find you in contempt.
Right. I agree.
The moment that prosecutor says the state of versus Mr. Class, we object because the state's not the injured party here. Where is the real injured party? So we find the prosecutor bringing false information before this jury and giving testimony to an injured party that doesn't exist. So they could turn around and prosecute him and find him in contempt and bring charges against him. And dismiss the case. But see, these are things that the people don't understand. And that's the same thing with a grand jury. That judge and that prosecutor is not supposed to be in there. The sheriff is supposed to be bringing people in, and that includes the defendant. That defendant, under the grand jury bylaws, because I'm sitting on them, that defendant is supposed to be coming in and giving his testimony. This is the only place where the defendant is not entitled to a Fifth Amendment. The grand jury is supposed to be protecting his rights. The purpose of a grand jury is to determine if there is enough evidence to go forward with a case. But when you've got a prosecutor in there that is tampering with the evidence and only giving a one-sided version, you can convict anybody. You can convict a sandwich on a one-sided version. And see,
did you just say a sandwich on a one-sided version?
Version.
Version. Okay, I got you. Sorry.
You can convict a ham sandwich on a one-sided argument.
Well, we couldn't convict Romney for handing out Subway sandwiches illegally, so what the heck?
Well, you couldn't get a grand jury to hear it because, see, the prosecutor, because, see, prior to 1948, in that time period, is when it got switched over. Because, see, the sheriff used to handle this. Then it went to the prosecutor, and he made determinations. Because, see, the grand jury originally was set up to hear complaints against public officials, primary. Then it dealt with any other criminal activities or any other charges. But when it was turned over to the prosecutor's office, he eliminated the public officials off of this and went straight after the people. This is where the problem lies. You're giving the Bar Association, you're giving the prosecution the ability to determine whether public officials can be prosecuted for fiduciary duties to the people. Well, we're not going to allow you to prosecute him because he didn't do his job right for you, but if he sits here and rips us off, now that's a different answer. And see, this is where the people really need to have a better understanding of what a jury is, of what a grand jury is, and what their duties are on this thing.
Mm-hmm.
We could actually take this over to grassroots if the people would understand what their job is when sitting on a jury. But how many times have you heard, well, I don't want jury duty. Boy, I don't want to do this. I volunteer for jury duty, and they won't let me.
Yeah.
They won't let me on a jury. Why? Because I'd be in there educating the jury.
Yeah, that would be dangerous.
Yes, it would be. So I got to educate the people.
So what, you're on like some kind of blacklist for jury duty? They won't accept you?
You got that right. I am on a blacklist.
How do I get on one of those?
I don't want to be on it. I want to be on the white list. I want jury duty. If you want a blacklist, go back in and do what I'm doing, start explaining what the real laws are and start educating people on the right side of this, and they don't want you on there. Start bringing charges against them and start proving them.
Okay. And is there a source or a handbook to educate people on how to do this?
What? How to get out of jury duty?
No. How to get on jury duty and actually, you know, ruffle the feathers.
Well, there's really no handbook other than what they got out of our Citizens Rule Book. If you got to go into this thing, you've got to be low-keyed for one thing. And with my reputation that I have, I'm pretty well known, so they don't want me on a jury list.
Ah.
But the average person out here with a little bit of knowledge can be very quiet, could walk into a jury and sit down, hey, look, ladies and gentlemen, we have a problem here. We heard what the prosecutor said. The problem of it is, where is the injured party? We were told that a young girl was raped, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She should have never been. But why is the state claiming to be raped? Why didn't the state come in and say, we are representing this young lady? We're representing her.
Mm-hmm.
Her name's on that paperwork. That isn't mm-hmm. how this thing works. It's always the state of that mm-hmm. is claiming the injury. So when the state of claims injury, the state of collects the federal funding. The victim says that, well, we put them away for you while the state's filling their pockets. That victim needs to be paid. That victim needs compensation for the injuries, and they're not getting it.
Right.
See, this is where the problem's coming in. It isn't the fact that we're sitting here talking anti-government. I'm coming back in saying, hey, for a prime example, for those who don't know, if you get into Title 23 CFR, Section 1250, what this is under the Governor's Highway Safety Plan, and that comes under Title 23 USC Code under 402, whenever there is a ticket, seatbelt, anything like this, your political subdivision is supposed to get 40% of that federal funding. Your political subdivision isn't getting squat, namely because the political subdivision is very rarely ever mentioned on the paperwork. It's always the state of, never the political subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that political subdivision is not getting its share. It's going into the state, into their slush fund. That was one of my arguments in my administrative hearing when I went after the driver's license. The judge asked me, says, Mr. Klass, what do you want? I said, number one, there's only two types of driver's licenses, a CDL and a commercial. And I explained them to him. I says, I do not qualify for either one of these. The license plate, there's only two types. I don't qualify for either one of these. I said, my third issue is I want my political subdivision to get its fair share under the Highway Safety Act. I want it to get its 40%. His mouth dropped because I wasn't supposed to know this. Because I hit my mayor up and I've hit city council up. And they said, Rod, what are you talking about, 40%? And I went back and showed them. She said, my God, we aren't aware of any of this. And they went to their attorney. And their attorney told them to keep their nose out of it. It's none of their business. So, see, this is what I'm sitting here saying. It's the amount of swindling that's going on. It's the amount of money that's being ripped off. They're not doing anything right. And my whole aspect of it is, these are your rules. These are your regulations. You wrote them. That's like the bankruptcy. Under the Federal Reserve Act, 1913, Section 16. All they have to do is take the note down to the Treasury, and your home is paid for. All they have to do is give your political subdivision the 40%. Let's cut back on property taxes. This would increase the schools, because the amount of money that the schools need, this would compensate. This would help out. But you know what? They're getting ripped off, because it goes right back to the Bar Association. It goes right back to the attorneys. They figured a way to embezzle it. And when you bring an issue up, they go before one of their boys, and it sits here and gets ruled against you, and they keep embezzling. This stuff has to stop. And under the present system, it won't until we get one of us in here who understands this and can turn around and come in and educate the people and get the people up and running. That's what I've been trying to do here for the last 5 years on AIB Radio. It's been an educational. And I tell you what, I've got people all over the United States that's doing some of this, and they're winning their cases, and they're making some of these issues. But I also have people that are losing, mainly because they cannot explain it or because of the corruption of the court system. So we're running into one of three. We're either winning or they're not explaining, or it's the corruption. Because I can tell people, I can't guarantee that a judge is going to be honest. But we can give them a good run for their money. That's what
we've been doing with them. That's good. Well, how many of these people you say you got out here doing this stuff are there that are voting for you, so that we can get a feeling of your you know, success rate as far
as
your run goes?
I really don't know, to be honest with you, because I've never really ran a poll, and maybe I need to have Harvey set up a poll and post it and see how many and what we're looking at. But see, I really don't want this going across the internet, seeing how Big Brother sits here and keeps tabs of all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah, that Echelon program is powerful.
Yeah, so we really don't want to tip our hand on this with them. I'd rather be surprised on November 6th.
Yeah, why not? We'd all be surprised on November 6th.
I just shouldn't be surprised on November 6th, because when we start blasting this out across the internet, you know, we know who controls the internet.
Yeah, Bill Gates.
Yeah, you got that right. and who is that vice president? Al Gore?
Yeah, that's
created the internet. Al Gore created the internet, right?
Yeah, he invented it.
He invented it. That's it. He was the inventor of the internet.
Yeah, if you're going to quote Al Gore, you got to quote him right. He said, "I invented the internet."
That's
the,
right.
The information superhighway.
Exactly.
But the thing, like I've always sit here and said, do I really stand a chance? I really don't know, to be honest with you. It really comes down to, I figure I'm probably slim on the slim side of this thing, but I do know with the amount of listeners that we have and with the amount of hits that my name has taken on the internet, I have got just as many hits on the internet as the voters between Obama and McCain on these websites.
Are your websites out there? I was trying to do a Google search.
Yeah, I was
going to
ask. Thanks, Chris.
You betcha, Robert.
Out there. What Harvey does on that's RaceRovers, and we got Private Attorney General website. Dottie puts me up in Maine on hers, and hers is called The Unmasking of Maine and Beyond. She's put me up on her website. We've had Land Farm and Rights. They were all over. It was easier to sit here and tell you what foreign countries did not hit it compared to the foreign countries that did hit it. I was all over her site got shut down, because they come in and nailed her because of some of the stuff that we was putting out created quite a bit of problems, because we was putting out too much historical documents on it. where the corruption was at. Mm-hmm. But there are other websites, Bono's Entertainment, with what he's doing. He's got out through the rabbit hole. They've got me plastered all over theirs. There are websites that I have just clicked on and seen my information. I've seen my stuff up on a rumor mill from time to time with what we're doing. So to really know who all is, I really don't know, to be honest with you, because I don't know the first thing about running websites. All I know how to do is play with my computer as a typewriter. It never runs out of paper unless I start printing. And I just use the Internet as a radio show.
Okay. Well, I think we're running out of time, Robert.
Yes, I see that. Actually, I was going to bring that point up. We only have about 5 minutes left. So I'd like to thank all the folks who came in this evening to the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Kim, for giving me the information and connecting me with Mr. Class. And I'd like to thank you, sir, for coming in tonight and telling us about the Republic form of government. That's definitely some information that I was not aware about until this evening, at least not to the points that you brought up this evening. And I'd like to thank everyone, of course, in the chat and the callers. Thank you, Rex, and thank you, Chris, for calling in tonight as well. And also, Floyd, thank you. And also for the people who will be listening to this in the archive as well. And everyone have a good night and take care. And I will leave tonight as I do the other evenings for the show. And that is to play the closing song. And everyone have a good night and take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.